celebrating 25 years on the air. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Notre Dame has defeated Louisville 104-101 in five overtimes.
Run! Brian Stavisky! It's the ball game and the Irish will play for another day!
But to the Notre Dame family, I can't say anything except I've been blessed.
The Penn Kingsman 5A state champs.
I think anytime you have a team with Skylar Diggins at the point, you better not count us out.
The Indianapolis Colts select Quentin Nelson.
Charlie Weiss's tenure as Notre Dame's football coach has come to an end.
South Bend, Washington has etched its name into Hoosier hysteria history.
Out of the 160 minor league teams, South Bend will be the best.
Brady hits. Demetrius Jackson.
Score, Marshawn! 4-2 Bruins.
Brian Kelly, the new head coach at Notre Dame.
They score! Notre Dame, 3.7 seconds away from a spot in the national championship game.
The Clay Colonials win the state championship. They are living a dream.
Arike Okunbowale wins the national championship for Notre Dame.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Good evening, everyone. 7 minutes after 5 o'clock, Sports Beat on WSBT Radio, brought to you by our longtime sponsor, Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. And by Train Heating and Cooling. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett, alongside Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider, for the South Bend Tribune. Thanks to the guys for filling in for me for a couple of days. Good to be back in the driver's seat. Looking forward to spending a couple of hours with our listeners tonight. And coming up on the program, after we take care of quick hitters, Eric and I are going to talk about Notre Dame versus Michigan in football. Yes, they're going to play in Ann Arbor this year, but what about after that? When are they going to play again? Are they going to play again? The Michigan AD has spoken. An Indy insider had a story on that. You were going to say something?
Oh, I'm just... At least there's not a Cold War going on.
No. Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah.
No, this is
right.
Just a logistics process.
Yeah.
It's a process. Also, if you are a video gamer from years back, did you enjoy the college football game? Of course, it is no longer being made because of issues with likenesses being used in the video game, and the Ed O'Bannon court case really ended all that. There's a chance that game could be coming back. So we'll talk about what is standing in the way in just a little bit, and we're getting back into how do we pay these athletes for their likenesses. So we'll get into that, which also will lead to our My 5 question of the day. If the college football video game comes back, and in the game, if you have the opportunity to play any present or past player, what 5 would you choose? I'll let Mr. Hansen handle that because he has a few more years of experience following college football than me. You're not older, you just have more experience.
Okay.
All right.
I like that.
Fair enough. Also, next hour, fellow SIU Edwardsville grad Eli Savoy from Memphis Sports Radio is going to join us to talk about the Memphis Grizzlies getting the number 2 pick. Who will they take? And is it possible to even win consistently in Memphis? So we'll get into those storylines a little later. Chicago Cubs report and a whole lot more coming up here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. But right now, we begin the program with this.
Be quick, but don't hurry.
It's time for Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beats Quick Hitters.
Life moves pretty fast.
From 96.1 WSBT.
Let's go while we're young.
Well, this afternoon on WSBT Radio, it was South Bend Cubs baseball down in Bowling Green to take on the Hot Rods. South Bend won the opening two games of the series, including last night. They were down 4-2. They picked up a couple of runs in the sixth inning to tie the game at four, and then in the seventh with a chance to take the lead, and Eric Gonzalez at the plate.
Second and third, nobody out. Sprangle from the stretch. Gonzalez, a chopper over the glove of the first baseman, Hollis, down the right field line. Cubs are going to get a pair. Eric Gonzalez, a two-run single. South Bend leads. It's 6-4.
Brendan King filling in for me on the call last night. South Bend beat Bowling Green 6-4, and they moved into a three-way tie for first place in the East with Lake County and Great Lakes. The two teams played earlier today, and, well, things didn't go so well. This is, I think, what Brendan was saying through the game.
Boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
Bowling Green 17, South Bend nothing. 17-0. It was a rough day for the bullpen. We even had a middle infielder pitching in the eighth inning. So Bowling Green won 17-0. All it hurts is the run differential. Otherwise, it's just like a 1-0 loss. Lake County, Great Lakes won today, so South Bend a game out of first place in the East, and they're back home to take on the Cincinnati Reds affiliate, the Dayton Dragons, tomorrow night at Four Winds Field, first pitch at 7:05. Let's talk some Major League Baseball. And for the Chicago Cubs, they got quite a pitching performance last night from Kyle Hendricks against the Reds. Plus, Mr. Hendricks took care of the offense.
Pitch on the way to Kyle. Swung on, hit in the air to center field. Back goes Senzel. That's over his head. It's up against the center field fence. One run is in. Here comes Elmore to score. A two-run double for Kyle Hendricks. Cubs lead 2-0.
Pat Hughes with the call. On the score in the Chicago Cubs radio network, the reigning Illinois Sportscaster of the Year, Hendricks, 3-for-4 with 2 RBI, 8 innings of one-run baseball. The Cubs beat Cincinnati last night 3-1. The Cubs have now won 22 of 28. Eric Hanson, will they ever lose again? Or is this just going to be the norm?
I think they'll lose.
They'll lose a couple? Point. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're looking awfully strong right now.
They are.
They're destroying Pecota. It was looking good when they were 2-7. Remember, Pecota said they were going to end up under 500 with their analytics work. And when they were 2-7, Pecota was sticking their chest out like, see, we told you. Well, ever since, not so much. Cubs in first place in the National League Central. It'll be the Cubs and the Reds. 6:40 first pitch tonight. Yu Darvish against Sonny Gray. It sounds like an American League West matchup rather than an NL Central showdown. Well, for the White Sox, last night they gave up 6 home runs in a 9-0 home loss to Cleveland. Carlos Carrasco starting to turn the corner for Cleveland, the starting pitcher. 7 shutout innings, 6 hits. He struck out 6. They'll try it again tonight on the south side of Chicago. Now we move to the NHL Eastern Conference Finals. Boston led Carolina 2-0 going into Game 3 in Raleigh last night.
2 shots on goal in this power play by the Bruins as it's led by McAvoy and eventually across the Marchand. Strips to the slot of Becker. He scores! 2-0 in favor of the Bruins. A power play goal.
The legendary Doc Emrick, who grew up just south of Fort Wayne, Indiana, with the call on NBC Sports Network last night. Boston beat Carolina 2-1. They have taken a stranglehold in the Eastern Final. They lead 3-0, and they can advance to the Stanley Cup Final with a Game 4 win in Raleigh on Thursday. Boston is trying to add on to being the Notre Dame Stadium champions, and now they're going to try to become Eastern Conference champions. Sharks and Blues tonight in St. Louis. Series is tied up at a game apiece. Well, the NBA last night, those Warriors without Kevin Durant still looking awfully good.
Step off a screen, takes a 3 straight on, knocked out another one, his 8th 3 of the night. And the Warriors back up by 13, it's 73-60, Curry's got 31. Bell turns and faces the bucket at the top of the key.
Doesn't want
to
shoot it.
Gets it to Klay Thompson. He wants to shoot it, and he hits it. It's a curling 3 from the left side as he worked up from the baseline, and the Warriors are up 11.
That's 2 in a row for Klay, and that's a good sign.
Audio courtesy of the Warriors Radio Network. Game one of the Western Final. Golden State beat Portland 116-94. Steph Curry was in fuego last night as he scored 36 points. How many threes did he hit?
Nine times.
That's right. You got it, Mrs. Bueller. 9 three-pointers hit by Steph. One game to none. Golden State with the advantage. Tonight, it's Toronto at Milwaukee. That's a weird-sounding Eastern Conference final, isn't it? Raptors and Bucks?
Yeah, it is.
It's not what you would expect.
It sounds like a bad regular season game, but this is a different year, so.
It would be like this year's AFC Championship game being the Cleveland Browns and the New York Jets. Except these teams have actually been good throughout the year.
Yeah.
But the names is what I'm referring to.
Right.
I mean, the Bucks. I remember when they had Sidney Moncrief, Jack Sigma. That was a really good era of Bucks basketball. And, of course, with Lou Alcindor, they were a championship team. And Toronto's always just been kind of good, but never, like, awesome good until the last couple of years. And Kawhi Leonard has been spectacular for the Raptors. So it's the Greek Freak and Kawhi in a great matchup in the Eastern Conference, and that'll get underway tonight in Milwaukee. It's been quite a year for Milwaukee sports. Normally, it's the Packers that bring all the glory to the fans of the Cheese State, but really, they're kind of falling behind what's happening with the Milwaukee Brewers, making the National League Championship Series last year, stealing away the NL Central from the Cubs in that playoff game. And you think about the Brewers got to Game 7 of the National League Championship Series, only to fall to the Los Angeles Dodgers. And now you've got the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Final. Packers are kind of bringing up the rear right now in the Milwaukee area. And finally, since we're going to have a guest on to talk about the Memphis Grizzlies getting the number 2 pick later on in the program, here's what happened last night when the ping pong balls were bouncing around for the NBA draft lottery. The final four was Lakers, Knicks, Grizzlies, and Pelicans.
The second pick will be made by the Memphis Grizzlies. And that means that the number one pick in the 2019 NBA draft goes to the New Orleans Pelicans.
I'm just wondering, the guy laughing there, no matter what team would have been number two, would he have been laughing at that? Because it was just like, well, there's only two teams left. It's either going to be Memphis or New Orleans. It's not going to be surprise. The Sacramento Kings have just they bought their way into the lottery, and they're now the number two pick. I just thought it was funny. The guy was laughing. It's either Memphis or New Orleans. I don't see what the humor is in the whole thing. Okay. I guess he found some humor. The two smallest markets got the top two picks, which is cool. But the NBA office, I'm sure, would like to have Mr. Williamson in either New York or L.A. But here's the thing, Eric. Had the Lakers or the Knicks got the number one pick, what would we be hearing? It was fixed.
Oh, okay.
It was fixed. Now, the Knicks were supposed to be the number one team. They had the most chances. But the Lakers came from, what, like 11th to move up to number four. So if the Lakers would have got the number one pick, and with LeBron being there, we'd hear all the conspiracy theories today. Right now, though, it's New Orleans with the number one pick, Memphis with number two, and the Bulls really took a pounding. They fall all the way down to number seven, and they got a lot of work to do in Chicago. Those are our quick hitters for today. Notre Dame-Michigan football. Will the series continue beyond the matchup in Ann Arbor this fall? We'll get to some of the details coming up in just a couple of moments. He's Eric. I'm Darren. Thanks for joining us. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. 23 minutes after the top of the hour, Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. We thank you for joining us. We're going to focus on future Notre Dame football games for a couple of moments, as the Irish and the Michigan Wolverines will play in Ann Arbor this year. Of course, they started the 2018 season at Notre Dame Stadium, a 7-point Fighting Irish victory, which really was their hang your hat on victory, so to speak, during that season as they qualified for the college football playoff. Michigan played strong football down the stretch, helping out Notre Dame, actually, improve their status for the college football playoff. So the Irish and Michigan will play this fall at Michigan Stadium. And that's the last game on the books as of right now. So what does the future look like? I think the first place to start, and of course, IndyInsider.com had a story on this yesterday, that the Notre Dame football schedule is locked in through 2021. All those schedules are accounted for, so you have to start basically with 2022 as the first place if you think you want to play the series that particular year. So let's reestablish a couple of principles, Eric, as you think about the Notre Dame football schedule. Due to their agreement with the Atlantic Coast Conference, they will play five games every year against ACC opponents. So there's five of the 12 regular season games accounted for. You have the three traditional powers that Notre Dame will continue to want to play, and that is Stanford, USC, and Navy. So now eight of the 12 games are accounted for. Then you have to get to a point where there are basically two games that, Eric, you want to play against, I don't want to call it lesser competition, but you have to soften up the schedule in places. They're not going to play one AA schools. They might add a Toledo, for example, on the way. But also, you're looking for games where you don't have to return the game. You don't have to go to that team city. So those are kind of the payout games.
Right.
So all of a sudden, using those principles, 10 of the 12 games are locked in every year. So it does get a little challenging when you try to get to powerhouse schools to figure out a place to play their games. Now, the Big Ten, they're playing nine conference games, if I'm not mistaken. So for Michigan, they only have three games open every year.
Correct.
So the numbers get a little tight here and there.
Well, and there's already some commitments. When you get, we've already seen Notre Dame has its schedules through 2021 all done. But then you start getting into some of the years beyond that. 2022, you're playing at Ohio State. You're not going to play Ohio State and Michigan the same year. 2023, you got home against Ohio State, so knock that out. 2024, you're at Texas A&M.
At Purdue.
2025, you got Purdue, Texas A&M, and at Arkansas, so that rules that out. 2026, maybe you have at Purdue, but you also have Michigan State. So do you really want to play three Big Ten teams in a year? Not with this configuration. You kind of look at 2027, but then again, Purdue and Michigan State show up that year. In 2028, you got Alabama in 2029.
And Clemson
as part of your ACC. Oh, so you're almost looking at 2030. Now, on Michigan's side of things, they've filled up their non-conference through 2021 as well. They're playing Washington in 20 and 21. In 22, they have UCLA, 23 UCLA, 22 and 23 UCLA, 24 Texas, 25 and 26 Oklahoma, and 27 Texas. So they don't really have a great, you're not going to want to play one of those teams and Notre Dame in the same season. So you're looking at 2028, 2029, 2030 before they kind of free up. So yeah, they could certainly schedule it, and it looks like that's going to be the time frame. It's not going to be anytime soon, but it's not because there's a Cold War. It's because they've scheduled these other games, and I think it's a great series, but I think it doesn't need to be every year.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a second. Michigan Athletic Director Ward Manuel was asked if he has discussed recently with Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick about new dates for the series, and here is what Manuel had to say to the Detroit News. And this is what Manuel told reporters at the Big Ten spring meetings. Quote, "We have talked in the past about wanting to continue, but in the last few months, no, we haven't talked about it. I've been working on some other scheduling things, and so is he, and so we both have the interest to do it in the future, just not sure when." End quote. And now Mr. Manuel is looking for a new head basketball coach. All of a sudden, with John Beilein jumping ship to go to the NBA to take on the Cleveland Cavaliers, and I'm sure over the last couple of days you guys have talked about this. I honestly do not know yet why John Beilein is making the jump, but I'm going to guess that there has to be frustration in a certain sector of the college basketball coaching fraternity that the NCAA has just decided to turn their head to all of the, let's be blunt, cheating that goes on in recruiting in college basketball. It's not all across the country, but it's happening. I mean, we're seeing it pop up in these FBI investigations. It takes the FBI to get the NCAA's attention, Eric. And I'm assuming John Beilein is very similar to Mike Bray, doing things the right way. It's got to be frustrating to see some of these high-profile programs break the rules and nothing happens. Because you know what, Eric? The NCAA does not want to put those teams on probation. They want to see them in March Madness because they make them money. And maybe Beilein wants that final challenge. He's late in his college coaching, or his coaching career, I should say. But to me, this is very frustrating because we lost a great teacher. He's very similar to Mike Bray, Eric. He is a great teacher of the game of basketball. And he has adapted what he has been all about through the years, from what he was at West Virginia to what he is now at Michigan. And it's just sad for the Big Ten. It's sad for college basketball to lose a great teacher and a great guy like Beilein. That's frustrating to me.
I've certainly seen that speculation, given that John Beilein is 66, that he's just kind of saying this is a statement about the state of college basketball, that a guy like that would leave at that point in his career with all the success he's had at Michigan, especially tournament success, to go take over a rebuilding NBA franchise. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now back to our regularly scheduled programming already in progress, talking about Notre Dame-Michigan. I just want to sneak that in. You mentioned a second ago that Notre Dame-Michigan does not need to happen every year or maybe every couple of years. Navy's not going away.
Correct.
There is that long-standing relationship going back to the war. Notre Dame is going to play Navy every single year. Historically speaking, the intersectional rivalry between Notre Dame and USC is hard to top. Stanford, I think it's a great matchup because the institutions have a lot in common. Do I need to see Stanford and Notre Dame every year? And I'm going to speak as a fan first. No, not particularly. It's a fun matchup. It's a good matchup. But Eric, I think it's also important for recruiting, for Notre Dame being out more on the West Coast, at least one game every year. That's the great thing about Stanford and USC. When one is here, the other is away. So Notre Dame always has a presence on the West Coast. So is that why that game is so important?
In part because it's hard to get high-octane games for Notre Dame in November.
Great point.
And USC and Stanford are willing to do that. They're willing to say, hey, look, we're either going to be right before our last conference game or right after our last conference game. A lot of teams wouldn't be willing to do that unless you're an FCS school. Then the SEC will play you. But Tennessee was one of the few SEC schools that would schedule a November game. There's not a lot of schools that'll do that. And so you end up with a weaker November when you need some octane in there, some jolt to get the playoff committee to say, hey, wait, you know, they're playing big games too.
Let's just go totally hypothetical for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say our guy, Ward Manuel, calls up Jack Swarbrick. You know what? I really like this series. What if we agree to play you every November? Would you replace Stanford with Michigan?
Well, I don't think they would do that because of the Ohio State
hypothetically,
game. But hypothetically,
said, just for
if
fun.
If he said, you know what, we're tired of the Buckeyes and we're tired of losing to them.
Well, you could play them in early November. I'm sorry, Notre Dame in early November.
Okay, and so
just hypothetically, I'm trying to get a picture of how important the Stanford game is.
I don't think that's enough for Notre Dame to drop Stanford because, again, you get them right at the Thanksgiving weekend. So you have a little bit lighter academic load that week because of the Thanksgiving break. There's not a hurry to get back from that game. If you play Stanford some other time, then you have to come back from the West Coast in the middle of your season and play a game the next week. So that's another positive. And then Brian Kelly and Brian Polian and a few others stay out on the coast and recruit.
You're shooting down Michigan. Okay. That just shows you. Well, that's the importance of the Stanford game. That's why I want to bring it up, just so people understand why that Stanford game is really nice for Notre Dame, because when you just look at it casually, it's like, it's just kind of Stanford. You know, they're always good.
Yeah, but if Stanford suddenly went back to being mediocre, which mm-hmm. they have been, then sure. it's not as good of a deal for Notre Dame. But Stanford's been good in the Harbaugh, David Shaw era. Ironically, that Harbaugh is now at Michigan. Maybe David Shaw will be the next Michigan coach.
I don't think he's going anywhere. He loves Stanford. Yeah. He was awfully grumpy in the post game at Notre Dame in October. He wasn't very happy. I don't think he likes losing to the Irish.
Yeah, they got beat by 3 touchdowns. I wouldn't be happy either.
Well, he just was a little feisty.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with that, though.
Yeah.
If he got red-faced, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Just mm-hmm. a coach expressing himself,
okay,
which is fine. But going back to 2028, you look at the possibilities, folks. Generally speaking, at Purdue, what will they be then? Who knows? You got at Virginia Tech. Got to go back there. You've got a game at Pittsburgh. You play Navy probably on a neutral field since it's a road game. The home games are Miami, Florida, who could be a powerhouse. Then we don't know. There's a possibility. Boston College, who probably will be 7 win, give or take. Then you have Clemson and Alabama. On the home schedule, Eric, Alabama, Clemson, and Miami, Florida, with Boston College thrown in. That's got to be one of the greatest home schedules in terms of competition we have seen.
And Brian Kelly will be happily retired. He's going to go, that guy that followed me isn't any good, is he? He's not getting a statue.
You know, at BK's going away press conference, if he has one, that's the perfect question. Coach, what do you think of the 2028 schedule?
Yeah, because I'm not going to be able to ask him about injuries anymore if they have these nationalized reports.
Well, hopefully that's a few years down the line. But that 2028 schedule, and then 2029, you're at Alabama, at Florida State, at North Carolina State, and at Syracuse. And that's just 4 road games we know of right now.
Right.
With Georgia Tech and Wake Forest at home. And then in 2031, you go to Clemson again. My goodness, that is an interesting little schedule coming up years down the line. And even 2026, at Purdue, at USC, at Florida State, at North Carolina, and then that neutral site game against Navy. There's some interesting schedules coming up. All right, it is now 37 minutes after the top of the hour. He's Eric, I'm Darren. Sports Beat will continue in just a moment. College football video game, very popular back in the day. It could be coming back, but there are some obstacles because, of course, money is involved, and we're talking about student athletes. We'll talk about that storyline in just a moment as Sports Beat rolls on. Brought to you by our good friends at Budweiser, the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, and Train Heating and Cooling from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. You are looking live. Welcome back to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. 18 minutes in front of the top of the hour. I'm Darren Pritchett. He's Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I started the segment with that phrase because so many college football Saturdays and maybe some NFL games started with Brett Musburger saying that. Those words, you are looking live at Notre Dame Stadium. Well, for college football fans, they have not been able to play their favorite game since 2010, when the college football game from EA Sports had to go away. But there's a chance it could be coming back. Before we tell you the story, a little side story. There's a gentleman, and I read this story a year ago, that the last college football video game was 2010, and you could always go in and type in the names of the players. Well, this guy, ever since the game went away, has kept that 2010 game, and each year, he updates all the names.
Wow.
So the seniors go away, and he adds the freshmen, and he plays his favorite video game, the college football game, using the up-to-date rosters.
Except for the Michigan roster, remember, because there wasn't one.
He just puts Laurel and Hardy as the running back tandem. Starsky and Hutch are the wide receivers for Michigan, since, of course, no one can know what the roster for the Wolverines look like. Oh, yeah, we had the Cold War before the first game this year because Notre Dame didn't come out with theirs.
Remember on game day on the flip card, it was like historic yes, it was. Players. That's it was right. Like Paul Horning and Rocket.
Oh, boy. Thank you, Mr. Harbaugh, for all the entertainment. That's for sure. But anyway, there is a chance that the ever-popular NCAA football video game could be coming back. The game stopped after the Ed O'Bannon antitrust lawsuit that began in 2009. Fans are still holding out hope that the video game, made popular more than 20 years ago, will return. So there is a possibility that the game could come back. Now, when you talk about likeness in a video game, that's where we run into problems. For example, if you play Notre Dame, number 12 is going to be the quarterback for the Fighting Irish. And does Ian Book deserve the right to get a fee for the use of his likeness? I think this goes back to the selling of jerseys. Back in the day when you had your favorite Notre Dame basketball player, pick one from the past or even today, and you go buy their jersey, and it's the number of the player that's really good or whatever the case may be. Do they deserve money for the use of that likeness? Well, the NCAA is forming a working group that consists of 19 people, including three athletes from the Division I to Division III levels. Now, the NCAA has released a statement on what the group will be tasked with doing. Quote, this group will bring together diverse opinions from the membership, from presidents and commissioners to student athletes, that will examine the NCAA's position on name, image, and likeness benefits and potentially propose rule modifications tethered to education. We believe the time is right for these discussions and look forward to a thorough assessment of the many complexities involved in this area. End quote. The NCAA wants to make it clear this working group is not going to result in student athletes being paid or viewed as employees. That battle will have to continue, but this represents a step toward the conversation happening one day, hopefully soon. More, this time from Gene Smith, Ohio State Senior Vice President, Athletics Director, and Working Group Co-Chair. Quote, while the formation of this group is an important step to confirming what we believe as an association, the group's work will not result in paying students as employees. That structure is contrary to the NCAA's educational mission and will not be part of the discussion, end quote. So how are we going to get the video game back if the student athletes are not going to receive compensation for their likenesses being used? How do we get around that? Seems like it's an awfully big hurdle we're dealing with. And this just seems to go back to the fact, can you put this into a fund that the kids can't touch until they're done with their amateur status?
Right. Although it seems like the argument from at least the student athletes is that the money does them more good when they're still in school because they don't have the professional opportunity. Once they're able to play in the NFL, then this is pocket change for them.
True, but there's a lot of other kids.
Right, that don't ever get a chance to go to the NFL. I understand.
Like,
that.
For example, back a couple of years ago, Brandon Newman, defensive player, not going to the NFL, but yet after his collegiate career is complete, he could pick up some compensation for his likeness being used in the game, even though you probably never would have used him in the game. I don't mean to be mean, but he would have been the super sub if you run out of players.
The thing I would like to see is, what are we talking numbers-wise? You know, what would, and would a star player in the game get more than a bit player in the game? Or does everybody on every team get the same amount of money?
I would think.
You would think, but...
Well, how do you decide that? How do you go with a different formula with all these players? I just don't see how you can do that.
So then, if everybody gets the same, are we talking a few $100s? Are we talking a few $1,000s? Are we talking less than all that? That's what I'm curious about.
Well, I think it's very similar to a story I was told. The late Tom Dennen used to co-host this program. He was the original host of Weekday Sports Beat back in, January 10th, 1994, when the show debuted 25 years ago. And I remember he told me the story. Of course, he was the announcer in the broadcast booth for Rudy. And he was the actual voice that day when the actual Rudy game took place. And I don't remember the exact story that Tom told me, but the basis of it was every once in a while he'd receive a check. Because every time Rudy is shown on TV or something comes about with the movie, he gets a, it was a very small check. We're not talking $10,000. It might have been a few bucks, but there was always money coming in. I think he probably had to be a part of the Actors Guild, I would assume, being in the movie.
I'm assuming.
So that's probably where it came from. So every once in a while, you're going to get a little something-something for the effort.
Why I'm laughing is...
I was wondering why you were laughing.
Because I wrote a couple of books a little over a decade ago, and you get an advance up front.
Okay, yeah.
But you also get royalties afterwards. And the royalty checks were pretty small. You know, I mean, not small enough that you would be embarrassed to cash them, but small enough where you went, oh, okay, I can buy dinner out for my family, not, you know, a new car. But the funny thing was, one time they got the checks mixed up, and there was a guy that wrote this travel book. I got his check and he got mine. And I'm like, wow. And we had the same name. And my kids were like, don't give it back, don't give it back. And I said, this isn't mine, I've got to give it back. So I did.
What year was the last year you wrote a book?
2000. I ghostwrote one in 2006 or 7, but the other ones were 2004 and 2005.
Do you still get checks?
From the 2005 one, strangely.
Which one was that, if you don't mind me asking?
It was Notre Dame, Where Are They Now? And the reason is a new publisher bought the book, or bought the rights to the book, and so they reissued it, and they wanted me to write a new introduction to it. And I said, you know, this book is so old, I feel like I'm ripping people off because their stories have changed so much in that time, so I don't want any part of that. And they go, well, we own the rights and we're going to do what we darn well please. So they paid somebody else to write this introduction, and then I start getting checks in the mail, and I go, okay, this is okay. But I really didn't want to actively promote it because I just didn't feel like, you know, these people were in the same station in their lives that they were when I wrote the book. It was just too old. But, yeah, it's a weird business.
Well, I'm not a huge fan of paying student-athletes, but I do believe in situations like this, their likeness drives the game, or it's just a football game with a bunch of numbers. It is their numbers, their likenesses being used. So I think there has to be some sort of compensation to these student athletes. Now, how you do that, that is the huge question mark. The game was extremely popular. I remember having it. It was a fun game to play. You know, back then you had Colorado and Nebraska with the option games you could play, or you could go play a wide-open passing attack. Now, today's game's totally different, so you would have all these great quarterbacks to use to run all over the place with and throw the football around. So it would be great for college football fans to get the game back, but I'm not sure the steps it's going to take. But I do think the players deserve something. I don't know how you get it to them, but they are the basis of the game. It's not the same game without their likenesses. Now, their names are not used, but you can type those in. But, hey, the Notre Dame quarterback's going to be number 12, plain and simple. And back in the day, Manti Te'o would have been number 5 playing middle linebacker.
The last time I played a football game, I have never played the Madden games or any of those. I used to play, my friend Mark Hall had this game where it vibrated. You'd have these players on this board that vibrated.
The electronic.
Yeah, the electronic one. And there was like a little piece of lint was the football.
Yes.
And when we would lose those pieces of lint, we'd just go to his mom's dryer and pick out a piece.
That's a great idea.
That's how long
I never understood that game. It was kind of, the players would go all over the place. You'd try to dial it up, and it just took forever.
Right. It wasn't a really good version of the game.
The handheld electric football was a lot of fun. But then everything took off with Tecmo Bowl. That was fun because Bo Jackson was unstoppable in that game.
Did you guys used to play the paper footballs where you would flick it through and the guy would hold his hands up?
Hold your hands up? Absolutely.
Yeah.
There was the John Elway game, the Tecmo Bowl game, and then Madden just changed everything. It is remarkable. I'm not very good at passing on Madden. I just cannot do it for some reason. Like, you can't see the outside receiver, so you're kind of guessing if they're open. It's a challenge. I stick to hockey.
I mean, when my kids were like teenagers, I played the Tony Hawk skateboard game with them.
Really?
Yeah. That was fun. They had good music on that.
See, now it's Fortnite.
I know. My oldest grandson plays that. I don't know whether he should be or not, but he says he's good at it.
It's okay.
Okay.
You know, there's...
He doesn't play it at my house, but he tells me that he'd whip me at it, and I said, yeah, I don't play it, so of course you would.
There's shooting involved, but it's tastefully done. Now people are going to be anti-shooting. Hey, yeah. I get it. I'm not trying to start a war here, but for a shooting game, it's very mild.
Kind of like Space Invaders and that kind of stuff?
Compare to that. Okay. No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Don't think so. So there is a chance the college football video game might return. It's not obviously going to be ready for this year, but maybe down the road. But there's a lot of obstacles. Mm-hmm. And this just goes back to the paying of student athletes. We're back to that particular spot again. Quick timeout. More Sports Beat next on WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
So we pick up on our college football video game conversation. If it comes back and if you had the option to play present or past players, which five would you take control of? Eric will handle this. We'll go with number five.
I wanted to get a defensive player here right off the bat, so I went with who I thought was the best defensive college player of kind of my era.
Randy Gradishar.
No, I went with Hugh Greene from Pittsburgh. He was a Heisman Trophy runner-up. Listen to some of these stats. 53 career sacks. That's insane. 4 interceptions, 24 forced fumbles, and 2 block kicks, and a zillion tackles.
Wow. Wow.
Boy. That escalated quickly.
Sure did. Number 4.
And it's hard to plug somebody like Roger Staubach into these offenses. I'm sure he would be great. I went with Patrick Mahomes at number 4. He had 819 total yards, which is an NCAA record in one game. So I would like to have him on the day that he gets 819 yards.
Then you put him in the transfer portal, and he goes to Notre Dame. Number 3.
I'm going with another defensive player. I'm going with Heisman Trophy winner Charles Woodson of Michigan. And he could play on offense. You could put him on offense because he did play on offense. He could do returns. So he's going to get you lots of points in your game.
College football video game, if it comes back, if you could choose a player to play, who would it be? Here's number 2.
Barry Sanders.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to get you points catching the ball, running the ball, and in the return game.
And number 1 is?
Rocket. Give me some Rocket. Ooh. Because you plug him into today's offenses, boy, watch those numbers multiply.
That's the My 5 Question of the Day from WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, John Finneran has the latest from the Symetra Golf Tournament, and Tom Noy has a Kelly Welsh column. And, of course, we'll have much, much more.
Very good. A couple of big tournaments coming to the South Bend area in June. Symetra Tour, Foreman's Invitational, and the U.S. Senior Open at Warren Golf Course at Notre Dame. Good to be back with you. Let's do it again tomorrow from Four Winds Field.
I'm looking forward to it.
Sean will be with me in just a moment. Top of the hour, WSBT South Bend.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, this is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Notre Dame is moving on to the Elite Eight. Taylor, he stopped. Notre Dame wins.
Lick Leitner and Smallbone have been the catalysts for South Bend St. Joseph's. Jalen Smith verbally committed to play football at Notre Dame.
And Notre Dame is going to Omaha for the first time since 1957.
Rebound, run the wall, middle. Score!
Congratulations, Tom, on the championship.
Thank you. We brought one back to South Bend, finally.
Ryan Newman, Roger Penske, win the Daytona 500.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC.
And express how sorry I am towards Matt Tyne.
And the White Sox have won the World Series.
I don't pay a damn bit of attention to what people on the outside say, because I understand none of them, though.
York now. In front, Ogletee. They score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four!
The Colts of Indianapolis win Super Bowl 41.
The Fighting Irish are national champions in 2001. Notre Dame! Notre Dame! Notre Dame is the national champion!
Is that the play that will seal the playoff bid for Fighting Irish?
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
It's our 25th year on the air on WSBT Radio, Budweiser's weekday sports beat from 96.1 WSBT, brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. And by Train Heating and Cooling. Brian Driscoll will join us in just a second. Also coming up, Eli Savoy from Memphis Sports Radio will join us, as they're probably pretty excited down in Memphis right now. The Grizzlies with the number two pick in the NBA draft thanks to last night's lottery. So they've got a decision to make. Plus, I just want to ask, is it possible to be a winning franchise in Memphis? Can they be a contender? And I think it's very difficult in that size market. So we'll ask Eli those questions coming up in just a little bit here on WSBT Radio. If we can get Brian on the line, and we will continue on here on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT. Brian from Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. He is with us normally every Tuesday at 6:07, so we're going to talk to him tonight. And you know what? Honestly, I don't have a whole lot specific to touch base with him. I'm just going to kind of go.
We're in that gray area right now. We're obviously in the off season, and so there you, just some things floating around. I agree with what you were talking about with Memphis. I'm curious because they just fired David Fizdale. What in the beginning of last season, not this season that just ended, but the season before, after they had a pretty good season. They won 43 games the year before that, and now they've kind of steadily regressed the last couple years, and it's obviously not a big market in Memphis.
The one thing I was going to say about bringing Brian aboard, and there's not really a strong tie-in to talk about Notre Dame football, but the one thing I wanted to get into, is there a game on the schedule that could be make or break for this team? Now, Georgia is a game that is perceived across the country as a loss for Notre Dame, going down to Athens to take on the Bulldogs between the hedges. So I don't think that's a make-or-break type game. So what does that leave? Is it Michigan? Is it Stanford at the end of the year? That's been sometimes an obstacle for this football team. So let's dig into those conversations as Brian Driscoll from Blue and Gold Illustrated and blueandgold.com joins us here on WSBT Radio. Brian, it's Darren. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys.
Good to be with you as always. We were just starting a conversation. We were looking at the 2019 Notre Dame football schedule, and I offered a general thought. I think the perception across the country is, when you talk about September 21st, Notre Dame at Georgia, that Georgia is going to win that football game. The Irish going down between the hedges to take on probably a top five Georgia team. So we know that's going to be a very difficult matchup. So with that being said, Brian, is there a game on the 2019 schedule, and I'll let you define what this means, that could be make or break for this Notre Dame football team and their efforts to get to the playoff? Did I lose you?
Yes.
I was going
to
say.
I just got a text. That was some deep pondering that we were having.
This segment is off to one heck of a start.
Yes, it is. We're just flying right through this. I thought he was going to pontificate and just get the best answer that we've ever heard.
I thought he was just building the drama up there.
That's right.
It's like my question wasn't that good. It was okay. But so, we'll,
so this is what happens when you go away for a couple of days. You come back and there are mice everywhere.
Just happy to be here, Clark.
That's right.
It's a gift that keeps on giving the whole year. That's an RV, Clark. All right, we'll get.
I don't
get
know why
Ryan.
They call it Hamburger Helper. It's just fine by itself.
You just let him go. Anyway, all right, we'll bring Brian back aboard, and let's see if we can try this again. So I don't know how much of that you heard, Brian, but I'll just sum it up this way. The Georgia game is going to be a difficult game for Notre Dame. Many across the country, I think, are going to pick Georgia to win that game. If the Irish are going to get to the playoff, outside of the Georgia game, what do you believe could be a make-or-break game for the Fighting Irish?
I think it's going to be Michigan. I think, you know, that's the game that is going to be a spotlight game. I think the fact that it's going to be played in October as opposed to the first week of September like last weekend, if Michigan's going to be as good as the prognosticators think, which, you know, I'm not sure they're going to be quite that good, I think that's that late season road game against a conference foe that could be the game that really pushes them over the edge. And then beyond that, I think you have to go Stanford. I mean, Notre Dame hasn't beaten Stanford at Stanford since 2007. So when they have Stanford on the schedule, that to me is the biggest roadblock to Notre Dame being a playoff team beyond being competitive against Georgia.
Well, speaking of Michigan, the Michigan athletic director, Ward Manuel, this week said he and Jack Swarbrick haven't discussed the future of that series. What kind of priority do you think it should be going forward?
I honestly don't care much about the Michigan series, to be completely honest with you. I think it's a series that was fun when I was a kid, but honestly, mm-hmm. I don't know if brings Notre Dame a lot of value, to be honest with you. And, you know, Michigan is a good team, but I would prefer to see, if you want to play a Big Ten team, I think Michigan State's a much better long-term rival. I'd rather see a team like Northwestern. I'd rather see a team like Purdue, a game like that on there that just makes a little bit more sense. You know, maybe it's just because of my feelings towards the Michigan fan base, or, you know, sort of the superiority complex that Michigan seems to always have towards Notre Dame, but that series just doesn't excite me. I think there are other things I would like to see it do. I kind of like it the way it was now, you know, like a 1 year home and home, and then you take off for 7-8 years. That's kind of how I would prioritize it.
I agree with that.
So you're big in Ann Arbor? Apparently so.
Yeah, they love me up there.
Brian Driscoll from blueandgold.com is our guest. You know, we talked about this for a little bit in the first hour, Brian, so let me bring this your way. We were talking about the Michigan series, how it could fit into future schedules. And again, Notre Dame has Big Ten opponents on the schedule through 2028. Sometimes there are already two Big Ten teams on the schedule in certain years. And I brought up the fact, hey, you're going to play five ACC games every year. You got the three traditional powers, Navy and USC and Stanford. That's going to be on the schedule every year. You got the two games that are probably going to be non-return games that are going to be on the schedule. And I just talked a little bit about the Stanford game, how important that is to Notre Dame. What do you believe are the biggest benefits for Notre Dame playing Stanford every year, knowing that Stanford is willing to play the Irish in November, which is a big, important piece of the puzzle?
For me, I like the idea of schools with like philosophies playing each other. That's why I would love to see Notre Dame and Northwestern play more. It's why I like Notre Dame and Stanford playing more, because I feel like when I watch those games as just a fan of college football, I feel like those are two teams that do it the right way. Those kids went to class this week. Those kids are going to graduate. I mean, when those two teams play, it's like 97% of the guys on that field are going to graduate. I mean, that's the statistics of the situation. So that's why I like it. I also think there's still some recruiting benefits to Notre Dame of playing on the West Coast at the end of every season. They go right out on the road. They visit kids. They get West Coast kids will visit Stanford or USC and see Notre Dame. That's how they got Myron Tungavaloa in 2016. They were at USC. He was there. They kind of saw him and they were like, who's that guy? And that's how he kind of got on Notre Dame's radar a little bit. So I think there's a lot of benefits to that from a geographical standpoint. But for me, it's just the notion of two schools with similar philosophies on how to go about building up student athletes. And I really like those kind of series.
Brian, we heard this proposal from the NCAA this week, or a discussion, I guess, the NCAA is having, the idea of letting players use their own likeness to make money. What do you think about that?
It just depends on how it's done, Sean. I mean, there's a way it can be done that's going to make a corrupt industry even more corrupt, and there's a way that can be done where it's beneficial. I look at when I go into an opposing stadium, I see this huge banner of some player that gets a monthly stipend, and I think to myself, like, boy, they're making a lot of money off that kid's fate. And I think that's different than saying you're making money off of a kid's skills and those kind of things. But when you're making it off of his face, and I've written before at blueandgold.com that, you know, players selling jerseys, why doesn't a cut of that go back to funding medical costs for student athletes once they're done playing and they're no longer having their injuries that they sustained while playing paid for by the institutions that they played for? And so I think there's a way it could be done right if you put caps on it, if you kind of distribute any money that are made that way and you kind of hand it to all the players on scholarship. Because you say, hey, this guy's the star player, he's the money maker. Well, if that star running back doesn't have five guys and no one cares about blocking for him, then it doesn't matter, you know? And so those are the things that I look at and I say, it can be done correctly, but it needs to be something that is very organized and strict and direct and saying, here's how it's going to work. Because otherwise you're going to get SEC teams that say, hey, you know, we're going to get some booster to pay you X amount of dollars for something just because you're coming to play ball here.
Right, which is the way it used to be.
it's a legalized way of cheating, essentially, and it's going to hurt Notre Dame because Notre Dame won't do that.
As a quick follow-up, which do you think is going to be harder to regulate, that potentially or keeping the student athletes out of the state-sponsored sports wagering?
Oh, gosh. I mean, for me, I think it's the likeness aspect of it. I think there's still a, even though gambling is still becoming more and more legalized, I think that it's more rare that kids are going to be influenced to tank a game. I think most players are too competitive for that. Most players are already getting kickbacks in areas that they don't really need extra things because of what goes with it. I think it's why the number of instances where that has actually happened, I think to BC back in the 80s, those instances I think are really rare. And I think most kids are too competitive to really be involved in that, especially when it comes to football. So, to me, that concerns me, but it's not as big of an issue as just the things that I think leagues like the SEC and Big 12 will do if they're able to pay players for their likeness and things along those lines.
Blue and Gold Illustrated's Brian Driscoll, our guest on WSBT Radio. So thinking about the college football game coming back, I used to play it when I was in college. It was a lot of fun. And we were just kind of reminiscing today about players that, wow, could be a lot of fun to play in the video game if it comes back, if you can play old players. And Rocket Ismail's name came up. Brian, if you're an offensive coordinator in today's college football, how valuable of a weapon would he be and how would you use him?
I mean, Lou and Samoji and I have talked about this before on our podcast, and he was a player that was in the wrong era. In today's game, because the thing that made Rocket so unique is he could do damage with the ball in so many different ways. He could catch the ball deep. He could stretch the field. He could take a screen and turn it into an 80-yard touchdown. He could carry the ball out of the backfield, and he's a great returner. Does that not sound like the prototype outside receiver and that Brian Kelly and Chip Long keep talking about what they want, a guy that can take an RPO pass, turn it into a big play, a guy that can stretch the field off play action, a guy you can get jet sweeps to and reverses to, and oh, by the way, he can return kicks for touchdowns. So he's just a really dynamic player, and he's a bit of a hybrid. You know, he's got some Reggie Bush to his game. He's got some Will Fuller to his game, and he was really just a special, special player. And I don't think people realize just how good he was because of the era he played in and the offense he played in.
Brian, this is kind of a random one, but I saw you retweet a picture of a guy wearing one of those. It looked like he was in a 7-on-7 setting, and he's got one of those helmets that they're wearing now for those things. So my question to you is, do you think that we would see fewer head injuries if we just went back to those? They're kind of the old school looking, almost, you know, newer version of those old leather helmets compared to the helmets and face masks guys are wearing now.
I don't. I think, look, when the whistle blows, you can't tell a guy to stop doing this. It's why guys still got called for targeting, right? Because you can't tell Sean Taylor, may he rest in peace, hey, stop being who you are. Stop playing the game of football the way that you've been doing it since you were a little kid. I talked with Brian Grimes, who was a equipment manager at Notre Dame. He's actually involved in a helmet company now. And they are doing so much work now to make the helmets to where it's safer and it protects your head more. And to me, that's where the investment needs to be. It's, look, there's nothing wrong with the equipment to choose now. Let's just continue to work on making it better. Let's continue to make it safer and those kind of things. That's where my investment would be. I don't think, because look, back in the day when those leather helmets were there, a lineman was 6'2", 250 running a 4.9. You know, now right. A guy 6'2", 250 is a middle linebacker who's running a 4.5. I mean, Montez Sweat was 6'6", 250 pounds, ran a 4.42 at the combine. I don't care what kind of leather helmet you have. If that guy hits you going full speed and all you have is some little leather helmet to protect you, that's not going to end well. Because, look, I've had three or four concussions during my career, and it was never from a guy hitting me directly in my head. It was always me landing on the ground and my
impact,
head hitting
yeah.
the ground.
Right.
And that's usually where those kind of things come from. And it's so that's where I think better equipment can really help protect players. It's those kind of blows.
I saw your midweek musings this week. What are your thoughts along the recruiting lines about adding a linebacker for the 2020 class?
For me personally, I would add one. I like Cody Simon, a kid from New Jersey. He's obviously the younger brother of Shane Simon. I understand where there could be an argument to not take one when you look at the fact that Notre Dame in 2020 could have as many as 11 linebackers as three positions, and there's a lot of talent there. But my thing is none of them are proven. Four of them have injury histories, significant ones, you know, season-ending or long period of time injury histories, and we don't know who's going to pan out, who's not going to pan out. And sometimes guys pan out, and they're so good that they leave after their third year. Right, so there's so many what ifs involved at that position that not taking a guy in this particular class would leave me somewhat nervous about it. But then the counter argument is when I watch Jordan Patelho, who's right now a 2020 commit from Hawaii, he's being recruited as a drop end. When I watch him play, I say that kid could play Mike linebacker. And there's some safeties that they're recruiting that you could say, you know what, I think that guy might be able to put on some weight and develop into a linebacker. So I think that's kind of part of that decision too. Maybe they don't take a pure linebacker, but they take a player to another position that could eventually move to linebacker. So I understand where they're coming from. I just get a little nervous about when you pass on a position in a recruiting class.
Brian, final question in terms of Notre Dame football. Chris Tyree, running back, 5-star, seems to be leaning Notre Dame's way right now?
Yeah, this has been an excellent battle. And he's from Virginia, which, as you guys know, is a state I love being from there. And he brings an element that Notre Dame doesn't have. So I'll just tell you this, and you'll get an idea. As a sophomore and as a junior, in the 55-meter dash, he set the national standard, the highest mark in his grade in both years. And that's the kind of speed he brings to the table. He ran the fastest man competition at the opening last year as an underclassman, going against older players. And he brings just that, you know, we talked about the Rocket, just that elite speed that we saw from the Rocket, that we saw from Will Fuller. Chris Tyree has that. And he would be exactly what Brian Kelly and Chip Long have been saying they want, which is a game changer from a speed standpoint. And it's looking good. And it's always nice to beat Alabama and Oklahoma for a kid they really want. And Notre Dame doesn't do that very often. So if they're able to do that on March 23rd, and I feel good, or May 23rd, and I feel good about where things stand right now, that's going to be a huge, huge pickup for Notre Dame.
And on top of all that, the running back hire looks pretty good. Running back coach hire, I should say, looks awfully good. At least off to a good start.
Correctly.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Brian, what's happening at Blue and Gold Illustrated and blueandgold.com right now?
Well, you guys just mentioned it. There's a lot of recruiting stuff going on right now. We have one of our recruiting insiders just went to California today to see Jalen McMillan and some other top players. Mike Singer was actually in Virginia today interviewing Chris Tyree. So we will have that on our site tomorrow and through the weekend. So just a lot of recruiting coverage going on. And we're going to start running some promos here for our 2019 football preview. But you guys don't have to worry about it. We'll get you guys a complimentary copy. But
nice.
We will be selling those soon. So keep an eye out on our Twitter handle in our front page for those specials.
There you go, Brian Driscoll. Check him out, blueandgold.com, Blue and Gold Illustrated. Brian, thanks for the time as always. We will speak again next week.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
You betcha. Brian Driscoll from Blue and Gold Illustrated. 6:26 is our time. Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett with you. Coming up next, midday host from Sports 56 in Memphis, Eli Savoy joins us. We'll talk some NBA. Grizzlies have the second pick. What will they do with that pick? And how competitive Can they be in that size market? Answers coming up next from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
For in-depth coverage of players, coaches, and exclusive videos not seen anyplace else, check out ndinsider.com. Available on desktop, tablet, and smartphone. ND Insider, ultimate Notre Dame sports coverage.
The second pick will be made by the Memphis Grizzlies. And that means that the number one pick in the 2019 NBA draft goes to the New Orleans Pelicans.
I'm still trying to figure out why the guy thought that was funny. It was either going to be New Orleans or Memphis. It wasn't going to be Sacramento buying their way into the top two. It
wasn't a big shock at that point.
I don't know what's so funny. I really don't. Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues. On your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 WSBT, an old friend, Eli Savoy, midday host, Sports 56 in Memphis, joins us here on WSBT Radio. You can follow him at Eli560 on Twitter. Eli, good to talk to you, my friend. How are you?
I am fantastic, Darren. Always good to talk to you.
Home of the, Triple-A champion Memphis Redbirds from last year, but also home of the Memphis Grizzlies. So was there a buzz in town today on your station with the Grizzlies moving up to number two?
Oh, was there ever? Yeah, it was. This was about as exciting as it gets. It's weird because there's the way they unveil the things, the number two pick in a way kind of becomes a disappointment momentarily because you are hoping you got number one only to find out you got number two. But then kind of once you regroup and go, wait a second, we got number two. Like that's where we were going to get either number eight or not have the pick at all. So, yeah, it was there's a Ja Morant buzz going around Memphis. There's no doubt.
That was kind of my question, because assuming Zion goes number one, Ja Morant seems like he would be a natural fit for what Memphis might need right now. Is that kind of your take on it, at least right now?
Yeah, because in the offseason, they're probably going to trade Mike Conley. If not, I would guess that he's going to get traded during the season. If they can't get some the offer they want during the offseason, I think it would happen during the season. Because Mike Conley, I think, pretty much has made it clear that he's kind of done here and would like to go out and go to a contender somewhere, doesn't want to go through a rebuild at his age. They're, at the money they're paying him and kind of where they are, they want to get something for him while they still can. So Ja Morant makes a lot of sense. You bring him in as the natural replacement for Mike Conley. You get rid of Conley and you start the rebuild around Ja Morant at the point and Jaren Jackson Jr. up front. And certainly just watching Ja Morant, the explosiveness and things he does, I think certainly would be a very, very good fit here for the Grizzlies. And I would guess that unless somebody blew them away with an offer for the number two pick, I would think they're keeping that pick. And if they keep that pick, I really don't see them taking anybody other than Morant.
Eli Savoy, midday host, Sports 56 in Memphis, our guest on WSBT Radio. What do you think the value is for Conley on the market?
It's, that I don't know for sure. The fact that he stayed healthy this entire past year, I think certainly is good, and he played extremely well. When he was playing that at the end of the year, they kind of shut him down. It wasn't that serious of an injury. That was just kind of one of those things that the NBA does for whatever reason where, we're out of it at the end of the year. Guys just aren't going to play anymore. I think for a team that feels they're really close and needs a point guard, I think he still has some pretty good value out there. I actually think Indiana is probably as natural a fit as there is without a point guard under contract. It is his home. I would think that would be a good place, possibly. He would like to get to the East, I think, because it helps him a little bit in trying to compete for a championship as well as become an all-star, which he's become gotten very close to. But in the West, because of the guards, it's just impossible. So I think Indiana would be a possibility. If Kyrie does leave Boston and they miss out on Anthony Davis, I think they would be a possibility maybe to look at Mike Conley. I think any team that's trying to win right now, especially if you have a need at the point guard position, I would think that he would be somewhat attractive to you because of the level he's playing at and probably can give you at least a couple more years. It's a lot of money, but for a couple more years, I think he certainly will give you good value.
With tanking in mind and all the teams that are tanking these days, the NBA changed the odds, essentially, of the teams with the worst record having a chance to get that number one pick. And obviously, it worked last night. You got two 33-win teams, including Memphis, of course, getting the top two picks. So do you think what happened last night, do you think maybe it curtails some of the tanking going forward?
I would think so. I mean, like I said, I mean, this is exactly why they did it. Just show teams that it really isn't that valuable to finish, you know, with those worst records. It's funny because the Grizzlies finished in a tie with the Pelicans and the Mavericks. And so they had a drawing to determine the order of their tiebreaker. And New Orleans won that drawing. Grizzlies got second and Dallas got third. Little did we know at that time, the order of that tiebreaker drawing determined the top two picks in the NBA draft this year.
Wow.
Because if Memphis had won that drawing, they would have gotten Zion. If Dallas had won that drawing, they had gotten. So we had no idea how much that drawing meant when all they were doing is deciding a tie between the 7th, 8th, and 9th spots as far as the odds go and the ping pong ball combinations go. But listen, I hope it does because the Grizzlies taped last year, 2 years ago, or two seasons ago, the Grizzlies taped. There was no doubt about it. They made it quite clear that they were tanking. It didn't work for them. They finished with the second worst record. They got the fourth pick. This year, they didn't tank. This year, they were actually trying to win because they wanted to convey the pick to Boston. So they wanted to finish at no worse than ninth. But in the end, they get lucky and they win. They get some luck in the lottery and they get up to number two. So maybe there's some karma to that. I don't know, but I hope it curtails the tanking because some of that is just brutal to watch at the end of the NBA season.
Eli, New Orleans and Memphis, the two smallest markets in the NBA, get the top two picks. When you think about big picture, do you believe it is possible for Memphis to be a serious title contender for multiple years, or are they handicapped by the market they're in? What is the ceiling for this franchise?
I don't believe you can be a championship contender unless you just absolutely nail the draft year after year.
Golden State.
Because you're just not good. You can't sign free agents. The Grizzlies are not ever going to be able to get a big-name free agent to come here. To get a free agent, they got to way overpay. And you end up with a guy like Chandler Parsons who you're paying $25 million and he can't play because he's injured. I mean, there's just no way to get anybody to come to this market. It's, you know, and New Orleans deals with it with Anthony Davis. Even when you draft a guy, you might have a limited time with him before he tells you, like, you got to get rid of me. I don't want to be in this market anymore. I think, you know, the Grizzlies made the Western Conference final. A lot of things went right for them in 2013 when they made the Western Conference finals. I just think it's, to get there is a challenge enough. Especially with the way now these guys are putting together super teams, because they're never putting together a super team in these markets. I don't know what exactly the ceiling is, but I just don't believe you can be a title contender unless you just happen to nail the draft every single year, and that's really hard to do.
Well, when I look at what's going on with the organization right now, they fired David Fizdale 19 games into, what was it, the 17-18 season. He had won 43 games the year before that. Now they fired his successor, J.B. Bickerstaff, who won 48 games in 2 years, and you talked about them trying to tank. So what the direction of the organization, I mean, is it the coach? Is it the roster management? Where is this thing? Where do they hope this is leading, and who's ultimately to blame for all this?
Well, they have completely redone everything for this year. I mean, they got rid of the J.B. Bickerstaff, which they made a change in the front office. They got rid of Chris Wallace, who had been the general manager for a long time, except for 1 year in the middle there, which was one of the weirdest years I'll ever see, where he technically was the GM, but he wasn't even allowed in the building, although they kept paying him as GM, and he never fired him. He just wasn't allowed in the building. He didn't even get season tickets. If he wanted to go to the game, he had to actually buy tickets to the game for 1 year. Then they brought him back after that and made him the GM and actually let him in the building and to do his job again. This year, they've gotten rid of him. They've actually gone to a 30-year-old lawyer to be the man in charge of the basketball operation, who has no experience, very little. He got hired 4 years ago as the team counsel, and this past year made assistant GM, and now he is in charge of the basketball operations. They decided to fire Bickerstaff. The coach, so they're trying to hire a new coach, and this coaching job is the least attractive job in the league, probably, because year after year they have paid the lowest of any team in the league. and they fire guys after 1 year. So it's really hard to go hire a coach with those two things as your selling point. So they have completely redone it. They're putting faith in a 30-year-old lawyer to see what he can do, and we'll see. I mean, it's in today's world of analytics and everything else, he is big into that. They've hired a couple of veteran guys to help him out that have been GMs in the league before. And this is the route we're going to go. So it's a whole different world right now. And certainly getting the number two pick was a big help for them in getting that started.
Well, Penny Hardaway just finished his first season there at the University of Memphis. Is he being tossed around there? Is he a candidate, do you think?
No, not with the recruiting class he's put together at the University of Memphis.
He's got more talent.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yes.
And that's the challenge, really, that the Grizzlies face right now within the market is, I mean, the University of Memphis basketball team, it has been here forever. It has been the lifeblood. It is the fabric of this city is University of Memphis basketball, and always has been. You know, the past 4, 5, 6 years as the university has struggled, and the Grizzlies, when they were going through their playoff runs year after year, the Grizzlies kind of made a little bit of a dent in that. But now with the Grizzlies having back-to-back bad years, all this stuff going on with them, and with Penny Hardaway in and doing what he's doing right now, it is a big challenge for the Grizzlies to try and get back into the consciousness because the Tigers are about to take over the city once again.
The 30-year-old lawyer is going to be tuning into the midday show on Sports 56 for ideas. He'll have a ghost Twitter account.
It is an interesting thing. Again, they went and got Rich Cho. They went and got Glenn Grunwald to help him. They're supposed to be hiring another front office person. We're going to see. I mean, it's got a little bit of the. I guess they're hoping for the Theo Epstein effect is kind of what they're going for here. We'll see what happens.
Final question from my standpoint: it's SEC football. Since you are in SEC country, I know you follow it closely. Besides Alabama and LSU, is there anybody you're watching closely that could make a push?
I'm really interested in what Florida is going to be. I think Dan Mullen is a hell of a coach. And I think if they can get the quarterback position figured out, and I do think he is the guy to do that, you know there's always talent down there. I like them, and I also think Texas A&M. I think Texas A&M could be one to keep an eye on. I mean, it's so hard to deal with the Alabama, you know, albatross when you're A&M and you're in the West. So Florida in the East, you're dealing with Georgia, basically, until Tennessee can really get its feet underneath it. But I think I like Florida as the one that I just want to see where things go for them. Maybe not this year, but in the next couple of years for sure.
We're having fun today. The Notre Dame football schedule, Eli, in 2028. Their home schedule will include Miami, Florida, Clemson, and Alabama. Any interest in coaching then?
Wow.
Is that amazing? That's the most interesting schedule. And that's just not the entire home schedule. BC's also on there, but probably there'll be another home game or two added. That's brutal.
Man, that is that is when ADs and coaches can have arguments about what you're trying to do. That's what I love. This cracks me up in college football now that they're scheduling games for like 2033. Like they may go through four coaches between now and 2033. So the coach can't even get mad because if he's still coaching there in those years, what the hell? He's had a good time, so it doesn't even really matter who you're playing by that point.
Eli, I don't know what you're doing on October 3rd, 2037, but NC State's at Notre Dame Stadium if you want me to get you tickets ahead of time.
There we go.
Hey, yeah. When do tickets go on sale for that game? I want to make sure I'm first in line for that because I am open that Saturday. I know for a fact I got nothing going on that Saturday. I'm quite clear of that. I don't even know how old I'll be then. I have to look at the calendar just to figure out how old I'll be when that happens.
Perfect.
I just had one more quick Penny Hardaway question because you mentioned his recruiting prowess, and I'm curious because this guy hasn't been playing for like 12 years. It was his first year coaching in college. So how did he turn into this recruiting guru in such a short amount of time, especially considering the guys he's out there recruiting? I mean, a lot of them honestly probably hadn't really even heard of him before.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, they don't know him as a player.
Right.
Most of them, we actually had one of the guys on today, and we said, I asked him, what did you know of Penny Hardaway? And he's like, I know my dad knew of him a lot as a player, but I didn't really know. He said, I knew he played with Shaq. That's all he knew is he played with Shaq. But he's had an AAU team, and he's coached on the AAU circuit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He's coached in high school here locally, so he had a connection with a very good group of local high school kids, including James Wiseman, who's the number one player in the country who's in this recruiting class. He played for him for 1 year in high school as well. But he's in his shoe. The Penny Hardaway shoe is still one of the top selling shoes in the country. The Penny Hardaway shoes, like it's at one point, and I don't know if it's still true, but as of a couple years ago, Jordan was the only brand that outsold Penny still to at this time. And so kids know the name because it's out there in the AAU circuit and the shoe and everything else. And the thing is, he's cool. Like, when he got hired, like, Penny is a level of cool that most guys aren't. Like, it just, he has made the program cool. And when the kids do the research on him, they see the level he played at. He's got Mike Miller on his staff, who they know, they know him because he just got done playing in the NBA. They know he played for many years. And these kids look at it as, who better to get me to the NBA than guys who have played at the very high level in the NBA and know exactly what it takes to get there? And that's what he's selling them on. And it's working so far. And the thing, too, now these kids, he got these local kids, and then because of the AAU circuit, all these kids know each other. Mm. So they go out and recruit each other. And it's almost the NBA thing of putting together super teams. These kids at the lower levels now, if they know they're all going to go play for 1 year, do one and done, a lot of them kind of want to congregate together and see if they can maybe win a national championship in that 1 year they're going to play a college basketball.
As we let you go, you have one assignment and one assignment only. As a fan of the team from the boring city, if I have to watch Luke Gregerson or Ty Webb, who's known for leaving $50,000 checks on the couch while he's at Bushwood, pitch another game for that team, and Ryan Helsey sits down there in Memphis pitching, I'm going to absolutely explode my head. It is, baseball's the only sport where you don't put your best 25 on the field, and it drives me insane. Every team does it. I'm done.
I'm just happy my Cubs have recovered from their start, and things are good in Cubs land right now. That's all I can say. You know, I've got nothing more for that.
See, he doesn't care about my problem. He's selfish. Harry, all he wants to do is talk about his team.
I like you having your problems. Yeah. At 2-7, I had a lot of problems with the Cubs. Believe me, I had a lot of issues going on at 2-7, but things have straightened out.
Well, you want to talk about problems? Our alma mater will never make the NCAA tournament in basketball, while my co-host went to Kansas. Don't you feel sorry for him?
Hey, you cannot mention Kansas down here in Memphis. That 2008, there is still a very open wound from 2008 down here. So you got to be careful as far as who you mention. Kansas around when you're in Memphis.
All right.
Hey, free throws.
If you want to get jealous, though, here, I'm going to tell you what I'm getting ready to do here in just a moment when I get done with you guys.
Okay.
This is very Memphis. I'm about to go MC a barbecue sauce wrestling competition.
What?
I'm trying to picture that in my mind right now.
Do I want to ask what gender this is, or do I just leave it alone?
It's men, it's women, it's whoever wants to get in a big ring of barbecue sauce and wrestle it out.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, what could go wrong?
Only in Memphis, man. I was the first year I did it, and let me tell you, you don't want to eat barbecue for probably at least a month after you watch this stuff happen.
Where's Tom Boyle when we need him? Anyway, all right. Eli from Sports 56 in Memphis talking some hoops with us. Hey, we'll talk some Irish football soon. Sound good?
That sounds good. I can't wait to get there for that 2037 game. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. There's a room in my house waiting for you. We'll talk to you soon, Eli. Thanks for your time.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Eli Savoy, midday host, Sports 56 in Memphis. Barbecue wrestling.
I was picturing, did you see the movie Old School?
That's what I was thinking, the Jell-O.
When Blue was in the, just substitute barbecue sauce.
Refresh my memory. Why did he pass out and pass away?
The two attractive young ladies, I think, who were in the ring with him, if I remember right.
Okay.
Nine times.
All right, we'll take a break. More Sports Beat next on WSBT.
The Leprechaun Lunch with former Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley and WSBT Radio's Sean Stiers. Friday at noon on 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Sean and Darren with you. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from WSBT Radio. Thanks to our guests this hour, Brian Driscoll from blueandgold.com, Eli Savoy, midday host, Sports 56 in Memphis. So he's emceeing a barbecue sauce wrestling event next. I heard the birds chirping in the background. I was just imagining he was on his plantation. The sun is setting. The deer are running across at the appropriate time. No, he's outside of a wrestling ring with barbecue sauce in it. I assume for charity.
I would hope so.
And I'm just trying to think of the weirdest thing I ever emceed, and I don't think I can come up with anything even close to that.
Nothing close to that.
How do you win?
Good question. You know? He needs to send you some video. I'd like to see what this actually is all about.
Do you just...
Or maybe I don't. I don't know.
I mean, the barbecue sauce would get all sticky.
I would think you would have it just in your nostrils
in your
for
eyes?
Weeks. And yeah, oh, that's true, too.
I would assume you have goggles
on. A lot of other yeah. Oh, that's
Blue had goggles on with the Jell-O in old school.
Right.
I think those goggles he had on caused him to see double. Maybe that was part of the problem. But anyway, that's very interesting. Hopefully that's for charity, but it sounds like whoever wants to do it, come on down.
I guess.
Do we have anything like that around here?
I don't think
so. That's bizarre.
Never heard of anything. I mean, that's the polar plunge is the closest thing.
There you go.
You get cold, but it's not really crazy like that necessarily.
Not barbecue sauce.
No.
Hmm. Well, I'm going to keep that off my list of things to do.
I think so.
That just sounds. And how do you broadcast?
Maybe if Clay's, if they melted those chocolate Charlies and you wrestled around in that, that would be interesting.
The marshmallows would be melted.
You'd have all kinds of goo on you.
We'll put you first in line since you thought of the idea.
Why not?
I just don't know how you broadcast a barbecue sauce wrestling event. I'll have to tune in tomorrow and find out.
Intriguing, yes.
We were roommates, so Eli went to a different radio class than I did, obviously, because we did not go down that road. All right, we'll wrap up Sports Beat next. It is 4 minutes in front of the top of the hour at WSBT. Budweiser's weekday Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. And by Train Heating and Cooling. It is the top of the hour at WSBT South Bend.